Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. When it comes to raising money, crowdfunding and operations like Kickstarter are hailed as a hipper, populist alternative to a loan, for example, from a big bank. But how cool is it when a Fortune 500 company crowdfunds? Well, that's what Marriott International essentially is doing. It wants to give its housekeepers a raise, and it's hoping customers will chip in. As of this week, a number of Marriott hotels are pushing the envelope, literally and figuratively, by the way, providing envelopes in guest rooms to encourage visitors to tip workers. The initiative is called, cleverly, the Envelope Please. Here with us in Studio 3 for her take on the, let's call it the tipping economy, is Nancy Kane. Nancy is an historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds the James E. Robison Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book, Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership, one of my favorite topics. Hello, Nancy.
Hey Nancy. So, you know, on the one hand, it seems like a nice idea, the Envelope Please. I guess Maria Shriver is involved in partnership with this group of Women's Nations. Sounds like a nice idea. On the other hand, you think, if Marriott really wants to raise their wages.
Raise their wages.
Exactly. So what do you think?
So this topic took me into the labyrinthian world of conversation around tipping. It's a very active, if you will, underground conversation that's going on in social media, has been for a number of years. And it's, I think, probably a little more intense in the wake of all the discussions and activism on in support around the country in support of raising the minimum wage. So I think I'm with you folks. I think, you know, it's interesting that Marriott's going to provide envelopes, but they have, you know, roughly 20,000 housekeepers, and they're almost all women. Most of them are not living in expensive zip codes. And why don't we pay these people who are an integral part of delivering hotel services, of the hospitality business? Why don't we just pay them more? So I think that's it's a really big deal. I think, P.S., most people, let's, before we delve into the hot, you know, kind of hot topic of tipping more generally, most people don't think when they go to a hotel room, you know, well, I've tipped the bell person,
yeah,
I've tipped the waiter or the waitress in the restaurant. I've came in a taxi and I gave the taxi driver a tip. You don't always think that there's a whole bunch of other people that may be worthy of a tip. The different people who clean your room, mostly women. And so I think there's an element of, if you will, just kind of, you know, the rhythm of human behavior when you're in hotels, which, unless you've worked as a waitress or a maid, right, or a temp worker cleaning houses or office buildings, you may not think about that aspect of your stay. And the envelope will remind you to do that. But again,
oh, I think people don't.
You know,
know,
Marriott seems to be pushing at some level. You can argue Marriott's pushing off, right? The, you know, part of the burden of paying folks reasonably and you know, for a good wage for a good day's work, pushing that off onto their customers. Who, P.S., are paying a lot for hotel rooms because hotel services like airline fares have gone up in the boom, boom, boom of business travel as it rebounded after the 2008-2009 recession.
Well, we got this statistic here that in 2012, maids and housekeepers earned a medium salary of $19,000 or about $9.51 per hour. Very, very few of Marriott's maids are unionized, and needless to say, where they are unionized, they're doing a lot better than they are in these non-union places. And as someone who worked for 2 summers as a chambermaid, I think maybe somebody left me a tip like 3 times.
Yeah.
I mean, you almost never get a tip.
Right. You don't think about it that way. In a way that you might tip a bartender. It turns out casino staff that man gaming tables are also high in the list in terms of proportions of workers that are tipped. But waitresses and waiters are by far and away. They claim, you know, somewhere north of 70% of, dear listeners, the $40 to $60 billion a year. There's a big, right, obviously a big gap because it's hard to get the hard numbers on this. $40 to $66 billion a year that Americans spend on tips.
You know, I have to say, I have much stronger feelings, I think, than both of you two. I am appalled by this campaign.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, which company was it who was urging customers to donate clothing or something to their work? So one of those big...
Oh, Walmart.
Was it Walmart?
Yeah.
You know, so if it turns out, as you said, Nancy, if it turns out you think your employees deserve more money, rather than have Maria Shriver front a campaign, and so the housekeeper in one room is lucky enough to get $3, the one in the next room gets nothing.
Yes.
The one in the next five, raise the rates $5 if they earn more, and then transfer 100% of that so that everybody is treated equally.
Yeah. But you're missing one point that does matter here, as Nancy just
pointed
out, that I think a lot of people do not even think to chip to tip the chambermaid. So if
so, how long is that going to be integrated? But how long will it take for that to be integrated into our mindset?
I don't think it's a terrible thing, because one of the reasons waiters and waitresses get such good tips is it's part of the culture. Everybody knows you're supposed to tip waiters and waitresses. I think most people don't know they're supposed to tip the chambermaid. So if you put it there, at least they know.
Right. So holding your point aside, it's a very important one, holding it aside for just a second, let me
double-click
on what Marjorie just said about chambermaids. So I went back, as the historian in me is wont to do, and looked at the history of tipping. Right? It's really interesting. So, and it's not something that's been written about in the way that a lot of aspects of social history have been very well researched. This is not one of those. But it has a rich history, and here are the broad outlines. So tipping, as we understand it, most likely originated in what we might call the early modern period, make it 1500, 1600. There is certainly written evidence that during Henry VIII's time, for example, and this is, by the way, European-wide, that travelers carried money to tip highwaymen, not to rob them. So that's a little bit different than tipping for good service, right? And then that morphed into, or that was became part of a wider tributary, if you will, of money flowing, in which European aristocrats would tip. So here go back to chambermaids, it was called giving the veils, would tip, give coins to the servants of the host in the country house in which they stayed. So, you know, kind of pushed Downton Abbey back, right, you know, a couple hundred years, and think about some of the wonder, Anna, right, getting tipped for taking care of a guest's, you know, needs as a maid or as a footman, and giving, that was called giving the veils, V-A-I-L-S. I don't know the provenance of that word. And then that gradually became, by the late 18th century, the late 1800s, Samuel Johnson purportedly, you know, drank coffee at a Fleet Street, that's a street in the city in London near the financial markets and what is today the Stock Exchange, or the Royal Exchange at the time. And there were supposedly bowls put on tables that said to ensure, with an I,
promptness.
Service, yeah. Or to ensure promptitude, and that morphed into tips. So By the beginnings of the Industrial Revolution, late 18th, early 19th century, right, some of the aristocratic, if you will, rural life had morphed into, or was morphing into, a more urban life. And guess what? All the newly emerged middling classes, and this is where it gets really interesting, Jim, the newly emerged middling classes, anxious in some sense to kind of ape the behavior, as we always are, new money wants to age itself quickly, right, ape the behavior of their betters, began tipping in cities. Tipping hansom cab drivers, H-A-N-S-O-M, by the way, tipping, bartenders, tipping, as we think of it in the modern sense, emerged. So chambermaids once, Marjorie, a long answer to your – long response to your question, were once tipped, right, in great houses. And then, interestingly enough, that practice came to America somewhere in the decade or two after the Civil War. Again, in urban areas, with reference to specific service people, and lots of sociologists and other writers on this, and we're not talking about a big group of people, have hypothesized, I believe with good reason, that giving money as a tip, whether it's a cab driver or a bartender or someone who, you know, is carrying your bags, is a way for all kinds of classes to feel in some small way like they are one rung above the people that they are handing the money to. So lots of people have suggested, Jim, that tipping has this kind of pretension, might be a little strong, but shall we say classist, right, appeal to it for all kinds of people at different rungs on the income ladder, all of which might indirectly augur for exactly what you're saying. Why not just pay people a living wage?
Right. Well, let me say two things. One, to explain myself, the reason I'm aggravated about this Marriott thing, beyond the reason I said, is I'm sure, I don't know this for a fact, Maria Shriver is going to be doing ads about how we want you to help us treat these wonderful people well. So essentially, they'll enlist us to help fund their crowdfund, as we talked about before. But, you know, one of the ironies you just mentioned, you talk about tipping beginning in Europe, and I was not aware of that. The irony is now tipping in the United States is a centerpiece, one of the centerpieces of the economy. If you go to a meal in much of Western Europe, you are not tip. The tip is included
in the
meal.
Service,
so there's been that huge
servizio in Italy, right?
So how critical, beyond this whole housekeeper chambermaid thing, how critical is tipping? How central to the U.S. economy is tipping?
Well, folks estimate that there are somewhere north of 6 million workers that live that depend pretty significantly, right? That's 6% of the workforce. That's not a small number, right? Something like that. Maybe a little. Actually, it's more than 6% of the workforce. It's probably closer to 10% of the workforce when we get to the actual number of working Americans. But in any event, so it's not a small deal. Here's something that really puts it into, if you will, a kind of in a telephoto lens, puts it into sharp focus. The federally mandated tip minimum wage, dear listeners, there is a floor beyond below which workers cannot pay wages to people who depend on tips, is $2.13. So I, who put myself through college slinging hash browns and fried eggs at Bob Johnson's truck stop in Bloomington, Illinois, right, depended critically on
tips. Don't miss it. Go ahead.
Right, don't miss it, right? Trucker special, two hash browns, all the toast you can eat,
sure
bottomless
is.
Cup of coffee and two eggs, $1.25.
Yeah, okay.
Right, 24 open 24 hours.
I'm sure it
okay,
is.
You,
yes, of
dot,
course.
Dot,
thanks.
Dot, right?
Yes.
So in any event, $2.13 is what if you work at Bennigan's or Applebee's
right.
or lots and lots of, you know, choose your restaurant, chain restaurant, or choose lots of other restaurants. That's what they pay you every week per hour, right? So think about what it takes to make, right, minimum wage at, you know, north of $7 an hour. You got to make $5 in tips. And
now they tax them too, which they didn't used to
and
do.
And now they tax them. So, and you know, okay, I'm sure total tips are underreported for all the reasons we can appreciate. But nonetheless, this is a big deal. And what if you look at kind of adjusted inflation numbers, it turns out that the gap between what employers actually pay of what workers that depend on tips receive, what they pay and what workers receive, it's just been growing. So in other words, employers in all kinds of businesses where there are tips and where there's a federally mandated minimum for tipped wages, right, are in a sense getting off easier and easier, if you want to put it that way. So your point continues, I think, to press in on us, which is why don't we just pay everybody $10.50 an hour? Choose your number somewhere in that ballpark is where we're talking about when we start talking about raising the minimum wage.
And the argument against that obviously will be, and we're going to talk about this a little bit in the next segment too, is some would argue then there's no incentive for an average worker who is traditionally a tip worker to treat you decently they know. But that is so disrespectful to the person as if he or she doesn't care about their quality of their work, just like an untip worker does.
Exactly. So I also went back and looked at, there's a gentleman at Cornell. Many of our listeners will know that Cornell University has arguably one of the best hospitality programs in the world. Michael Lynn's been studying tipping for a long time. And Michael Lynn and other researchers, but particularly Professor Lynn, have found that tipping has very, very little correlation to good service. Almost none, interestingly enough. Here are a couple of small tidbits that I know our listeners are dying to know, which is putting a smiley face on the back of your check has a very consistent correlation to higher tips. Patting.
You're kidding.
I am not kidding.
That
signing your name to the check, right? It's about being personal. It's less about service in some kind of objective, kind of frame about good or bad service. Signing your name. Touching your customers. Mostly our evidence is from waiters and waitresses.
Well, that makes
touching
total sense,
your customers
by the way,
on the shoulder.
In all seriousness.
Absolutely correlate. So the way we think about tipping is as reward or punishment, if you will, if you don't tip for bad service, has almost nothing. Again, this is not one study. This is like, you know, many, many years worth of data. It has very little relation to the amount of the tip. Now, what we don't know very much about, and which I'm very fascinated by, is who tips and who doesn't. So how many of us have – big groups, by the way, tip less because inevitably, right, someone in the pot who's putting money in the pot doesn't want to tip.
You know who the worst tippers are? I hate to say this.
It's true.
Groups of women.
That's absolutely true.
That's fascinating.
That's been my experience
is a long time. I had a lot of great jobs, chambermaid and waitress for a long time. But
that's when you made real money, by the way.
So that's really interesting, don't you think? So I think the sociology of this is really interesting.
The women are out there with their checks and they're dividing it among the four people. And I mean, it's just so demeaning to my sex.
Well, I think there's a lot of unintentional and intentional behavior around tipping that is ultimately demeaning, including the idea, and that, you know, we all do this in lots of different ways in our lives, that, well, we're tipping the taxi driver. Because I was a waitress for a long time, I'm a ridiculously good tipper. I'm like it's over the top. But you know, you give the tip the taxi driver $10 on a $10 cab on a $10 tab, which I've been known to do, and they jump out of the cab to get your luggage out of the back, right? But there's also something I'm thinking about myself here. Am I tipping him that much because I think somehow he doesn't have the same economic opportunities I have? And so I am being a benevolent redistributor of income. And there's something a little – makes me a little queasy when I ask that question of myself, Jim.
Yeah, there are a million – by the way, tipping, as I said at the beginning of this, is one of my favorite topics of all the ones Marjorie and I have discussed over a decade and a half. Let me end this with one positive development. Until we get to the point that promised land where people are paid decent enough wages, the reality is a lot of people depend on tips. Yep. That's a given. One of the great developments we read about this morning, and I've been thinking about this for a long time, is a lot of us don't carry cash anymore. Literally,
so
no
we
cash.
Need to talk about that.
And they
for
have
our
this
listeners.
Dip jar
yep.
thing,
yep.
mostly in barista kind of places, in limited kinds of numbers, where you can slide your debit card into
in a
little thing
in a,
tip jar and can essentially tip the person, whatever you want to tip, a buck, two bucks, whatever it is, which essentially brings tipping, while you smirking at me, into the 21st century.
And when do you slip your little card into the jar?
Well, let me tell you something, Marty. The one thing you cannot criticize me about, you've known me for a long time,
but you want to get credit where credit is due, so, and the barista's right in
front
of you. Oh,
he has to be watching, right here, she, yeah.
That's right, so, you want to get credit.
So I think it's important, again, for just us to draw a yoga breath and consider what's behind.
Did you say a yoga breath?
A yoga breath,
okay, I want
right?
to be clear, okay.
Right, because the increasing right transition, accelerating transition to a cashless economy, right, to the electronic wallet, is actually very much cutting into tipping, and that's why things like Zipjar or Starbucks now has a way of tipping on the Starbucks card on your phone, tipping the baristas. That's now if you carry a card, not a credit card at a meal, but a credit card for a drink, or you know, for a dollar, like you know. Some kind of a dollar coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, you're less likely to tip than if you pay cash.
Right.
Right. So somehow we got to figure out how to, busy entrepreneurs are figuring out, well, how do we devise apps on the Starbucks app on your phone or Dip Jar in which you allow people easily, right, quickly, in some sense, you know, with great facility to tip in the moment. Marjorie, you look very, very skeptical about all this.
You know, I think it's a funny thing, getting back to the chambermaids. I think one of the reasons they do so poorly in tips is because you don't see them.
Absolutely.
If you saw them, it would be a whole different thing. It's like if the guy comes to the room, you're doing the luxurious room service thing. Yeah. You're not going to let him come in and walk out or her come in and walk out. Like,
with zero on the line.
But you
right.
can sneak out on the chambermaid.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, you don't see
and
them.
I think, but I think also, you know, in the case of Starbucks and all these counter clerk tip folks who depend on tipping, right, there you really do want a way of being able to give people whatever that you need to give them. Most people are paying electronically. So we got to figure this out too. Right, we live in a society in which, in these established venues, tipping is part of the cost of the service. I think that's we have to accept that that's the case. You know, leaving aside for a second the, again, very very interesting tangle of motivations in all this.
Thank you very much, Nancy.
Thank
Kane.
You, Nancy. One yeah. of my favorite topics.
It is. It is.
Good to
it
see
is
you, Nancy
one of
Kane.
Our favorite topics. Nancy Kane is an historian at the Harvard Business School. You know, Jim claims he tips the garbage men at Christmas time. I don't believe
we call
him.
Them the sanitation
workers. Sanitation
workers,
okay.
That's
he
the
says
difference.
He chases them down the street with $20.
I don't chase them, but I do.
Yeah,
them.
I'll believe that when I see it. Anyway, Nancy holds the James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book is Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Up next, we're going to take your calls on all things tipping. Should we be subsidizing wages with tips? Do you tip only if you get quality service? Do you tip no matter what because it's part of the social contract? That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.